Airlines Confidential with Ben Baldanza and Scott McCartney is made possible with support from Pratt & Whitney, committed to working smarter, cleaner, and greener today for a more sustainable tomorrow. Learn more at PrattWhitney.com. DoHop, revolutionizing travel connectivity. Learn how to unlock unlimited connections simply at DoHop.com. And Cirium, the world's most trusted source of aviation analytics. Visit Cirium.com. We also welcome your business's support. Info at airlinesconfidential.com.
Welcome to Airlines Confidential. We have an exciting show today. Former Presidents Barack Obama and Donald Trump will be with us to discuss the merits of privatizing air traffic control. And Southwest Airlines has announced that on May 15th, they will begin charging for checked bags just in time for a busy summer travel season. Okay, I can't decide which of these is less likely, but I hope that everyone enjoyed their April Fool's Day as much as we do.
Very good, Ben Baldanza. Happy April Fool's Day to everyone. And happy eclipse, too, on Monday. I'm in Dallas, right in the prime viewing path for the total solar eclipse. And I've got eclipse glasses ready to view this celestial phenomenon. I've always thought eclipses are full tilt hype, sometimes bordering on hysteria. And when that really happens, it's a big, is that it? But it should be fun. So, Ben, I'm hoping this episode of our podcast will eclipse all listener expectations.
Not even the moon blocking the sun will slow down Airlines Confidential, Scott.
Yeah.
The eclipse doesn't disrupt air travel and everyone stays safe maneuvering in the sky and on the ground to get the best view. My son is traveling to Erie, Pennsylvania with a few friends on a school trip to observe the solar eclipse. All this eclipse excitement seems a little shady to me.
Ooh, a total eclipse of the pun, Ben. Speaking of shadowy things, I want to talk in depth about baggage fees, not the ones on Southwest, because that is April Fool's, at least for now, and why other airlines are actually going up on the price of bags when they can't seem to raise ticket prices as much as they'd like to in order to cover higher costs. And coming out of the shadows a bit, Breeze Airlines announced a new loyalty program with a co-branded credit card. I thought it was interesting because it says a lot about the state of loyalty programs right now. We'll get back to the baggage fees. But Ben, Breezy Rewards is offering members a fixed redemption value for its points. Breeze notes that travelers are miffed at repeated devaluation of their points and miles, and the number of miles and points needed for a ticket keeps going up at many airlines, and that inflation reduces the buying power of your miles and points. So Breeze is promising a fixed value. That's the good news. The bad news is that value is fixed at 1 penny per point. That's cheap. That's really low. Southwest points, for example, generally buy 1.3 cents worth of fare, 30% more when you use points instead of cash. The points guy's latest valuation of various programs, which it published in March, puts Alaska and American at a penny and a half, United at 1.4 cents per mile, JetBlue at 1.35 cents per mile. So all in kind of the same range. Delta, where members have derogatorily called Sky Miles Sky Pesos, was listed at 1.2 cents per mile. Really is lower value. You could check your own experience simply by dividing the cash price of a ticket by the number of miles required to get the same ticket. Even Frontier and Spirit are valued at 1.1 cents per point, according to the points guy. So Breeze launching at a penny per point seems pre-devalued. We promise not to reduce the value, but the value is already reduced. I think that's a reflection of several factors. First, Breeze is trying to win customers with unique nonstop flights, so travelers will choose Breeze for the convenience and maybe the service. Nobody's going to give up their favorite airline because Breeze is offering a great frequent flyer program. It's not like you can go to Hawaii or Paris with Breezy Awards, as it's called. What you do get is free Wi-Fi and priority boarding. I said at a travel show last month that I thought frequent flyer programs were no longer about trips, but were instead all about the perks, and that's what travelers should focus on. Savvy travelers use the programs or the credit cards tied to them to avoid baggage fees, to get early boarding, or in the case of Delta, to get free Wi-Fi. They are benefit programs, not travel programs, and that's really what Breeze is showing us. Breeze also touted its new co-branded credit card with hopes that it might prove to be the financial savior that credit cards have been for bigger airlines. To me, I didn't see anything unusual in the offer that would have mileage junkies racing to get the Barclays Breeze card. It's an $89 annual fee with a 50,000-point sign-up bonus, which means $500 in Breeze airfare. That's good, but really pretty standard these days. You get bonus points for Breeze purchases. Hooray! And you get 2 points for every dollar spent on restaurants and groceries. You can get 2 cents per dollar spent back on many cashback cards. And with the Chase Sapphire Reserve card, I get 4.5 cents back in travel purchases for every dollar spent at restaurants because it pays you 3 cents back for every dollar spent at restaurants, and you get a 50% bonus if you redeem for travel. Seems to me there has to be something more to get people excited about this Breeze program. Breeze Chief Commercial Officer Lucas Johnson told Skift that the program wasn't designed to lure road warriors to Breeze. It's designed to give something to the people who would fly Breeze regardless because they're in small cities with limited service on other airlines. Basically, mediocre rewards because it's a captive audience, exactly like so many other programs these days. Ben, you know a lot about loyalty programs and how they work for airlines and travelers, particularly at smaller discount airlines. Should Breeze be offering better benefits to try and entice travelers away from other programs, or is that a losing proposition?
Loyalty programs are clearly in the cockpits now when even tiny airlines like Breeze can't miss out. The thing is, Scott, is that it's all funded by the charges credit card companies bill to the airlines that accept the card or in the crosshairs of Congress. But I bet that our elected officials like their airline points as much as anyone, so the reward gravy train will probably continue. I saw an interview Skift had with Ryanair's Michael O'Leary that I thought was interesting, Scott. He's big on social media, as you might imagine. He admitted he doesn't really understand it, but it's free advertising. Ryanair has big numbers for followers and likes and all that. And it tries to do some outrageous stuff to get attention. O'Leary is famous for saying things like he'd put a coin box on toilets so you'd have to pay to pee on his airplanes. He never intended to do that. He just wanted free attention for Ryanair. Listeners may recall that we did a lot of that at Spirit. My favorite was when former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich was accused of trying to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat. We ran a sale saying that we'd been accused of selling seats too. That sold a lot of tickets for us because it put Spirit's name out that as a fun company with cheap fares. O'Leary said there were two subjects he wouldn't touch. One was safety. The other was the royal family. No jokes about the Queen of England when she died, for example. I thought it was interesting that even Michael O'Leary has his limits.
Very interesting, Ben. I remember being furious with all the media coverage O'Leary got for saying he would like to put standing room only posts on his 737s. He already had the maximum number of seats allowed on the airplane. You couldn't legally put more passengers on a 737 than O'Leary was already doing. So even if you did have some kind of post that you'd lash passengers to that would survive a 16G crash and meet safety standards, you couldn't put more people on the airplane. It was nonsense, and yet it got lots of attention and free advertising for Ryanair.
Well, Scott, in some ways, all press is good press. That's not always true, of course, but when talking about airline policies. For example, years ago, before Ryanair charged for checked bags, they first said they would not carry any checked bags. That statement made their imposition of the baggage fee easier for customers to take. Scott, one other interesting news note from me. United Airlines is rolling out a new feature that lets customers search for the best aircraft for their wheelchairs. You put the dimensions of your chair on United's website or app, and United will prioritize itineraries with planes that are best able to carry your wheelchair. If a better flight is more expensive, United lets you apply for a refund to get the lowest price. Sometimes cargo doors aren't big enough for larger wheelchairs. So this is really important to people who travel with wheelchairs. And damage to wheelchairs is a big problem for airlines and a huge problem for people who are dependent on wheelchairs. So anything that can be done to reduce damage and make travel easier for people with mobility challenges is great. Bravo to Linda Jojo, who is United's chief customer officer, and before that, head of technology, and everyone at United for making this available.
A first step, right, Ben? A lot more needs to be done to make air travel more accessible, but I agree. Excellent work, United. Ben, I saw yet another story this week suddenly discovering that taxes didn't get collected on airline baggage fees. This one got play on CNN and other websites, and it came from a business school professor. My first reaction was to roll my eyes. This is an old issue. It has resurfaced again because several big airlines have raised their baggage fees by $5 or so each way. But on second thought, rather than sigh, I thought it would be good for you and I to really have a deep dive discussion about this. Passenger tickets have all kinds of taxes, a flat fee, plus a 7.5% excise tax, plus TSA fees, immigration fees if it's an international ticket, etc. It's the excise tax that is the issue. Many see baggage fees as a tax dodge. Airlines have to price in the excise tax to the fare displayed. So if fares included baggage fees, they'd be higher by whatever the fee is, plus another 7.5% on the baggage fee. On a $40 fee, that's another $3 or $6 round trip. It's not insignificant when people are looking for cheap tickets. And it frankly may be one reason why Southwest, which doesn't charge baggage fees, often has fares that look higher than competitors at first glance. I've never bought much of the tax dodge argument. This is not about taxes airlines pay the government. The airlines collect the tax from the passenger and send it on to the government. Baggage fees are attractive to airlines because it's a secondary purchase. Unbundling allows the airlines to hook customers on a lower price, and then those that use a service pay for the additional service. It also creates a perk for loyalty program elites and credit card users, and that credit benefit is huge because the credit card companies pay the airline for carrying the baggage fee. So it's kind of classic airline behavior. Create a problem and then offer a solution to the problem you created that is only available to certain passengers. They either pay or they earn it through loyalty. Passengers may actually even prefer to pay a lower fare at ticket purchase and then pay the baggage fee at the airport. Dollars are different when you're on vacation. Why else would you pay $5 for a bottle of water at the airport, right? So I've always thought the tax consequences were secondary to airlines. Now I'm starting to think, as baggage fees go up, that there is a significant tax issue here. Airlines do get to offer lower fares than they would if baggage fees were covered by the excise tax. But given how much is spent now on baggage fees, we're talking $7 billion a year or more. The government is missing out on $500 million in excise taxes. And that could buy a lot of FAA modernization. So my proposal, Ben, unpopular as it might be with airlines and with travelers, add the excise tax to baggage fees when you collect the baggage fee. Instead of collecting a $40 fee, make it $43 with tax. No one is paying this in cash. It's not going to slow anything up by collecting taxes on baggage fees. I think it's only fair. Why should the fees be tax-free anyway? What do you think, Ben? Why would airlines resist such a change, and why wouldn't it be fair? Give us some insight into how baggage fees work from an airline perspective.
Scott, Scott, I don't think ancillary developments were ever about tax dodging. It's much simpler. People think about baggage differently than their airfare. For example, they may choose a different destination if their first choice is $20 too expensive. But once they pick the flight, that rarely changes their choice to check bags. Charging excise tax on bag fees would be inconsistent with other excise taxes charged. This doesn't mean they couldn't do it, but even the ticket excise tax came from the 1950s when the government was actively trying to reduce the number of airline flights, feeling that the commercial industry was competing for resources needed for the war effort. If successfully charging excise taxes on bags, what's to stop taxes on seat assignments, miles sold, or even a rum and coke on board? I think this is a real slippery slope. If the government feels they are not collecting enough tax from airlines, just raise the existing rates. Don't look at taxing more things.
That's fascinating about the history. And it kind of makes sense. The airline industry has long pointed out that airline tickets are actually taxed more heavily than cigarettes or liquor. I'm not sure that's still true about cigarettes. And it certainly varied depending on what the fare is. But the point's the same. It's so heavily taxed that from a distance, you'd look at it and say that's designed to reduce consumption. And so maybe the whole tax thing is backwards, and we should look at the whole spectrum. Well, Airlines Confidential wouldn't exist without our sponsors, and nobody eclipses Cirium in the airline data business. Cirium offers the most accurate and precise data and analytics to enable airlines to optimize planning, operations, and passenger services. The right intelligence drives operational efficiencies, enables you to predict market shifts, and helps airlines respond quickly to maximize revenue, manage costs, and seize commercial opportunity. Visit Cirium.com for more.
And we want to thank Pratt & Whitney. At Pratt & Whitney, the pursuit of more sustainable aviation is foundational. For decades, Pratt & Whitney has been at the forefront of revolutionary advancements in aircraft propulsion technology. And by working smarter, cleaner, and greener today, they are committed to supporting the aviation industry in its goal of reaching net zero CO2 emissions by 2050. Learn more about Pratt & Whitney's smarter technology, cleaner fuel, and greener business at PrattWhitney.com.
In addition, we want to thank DoHop, which is revolutionizing travel connectivity. DoHop is a travel technology provider enabling airlines to expand their networks, offer more connectivity, create additional partnerships, and focus on improving the customer experience with more services, offers, and travel options. Airlines benefit from generating additional revenue, lower cost, and maintaining full customer ownership. Plus, in the event of travel disruptions, DoHop works with airlines and offers assistance in helping passengers reach their final destination. Visit DoHop.com. That's DoHop.com. And I want to remind listeners that Airlines Confidential will be on stage for a keynote podcast at Aviation Festival Americas on May 15th in Miami Beach. This is the 16th year for the Aviation Festival Americas meeting, and it brings together more than 250 influential leaders from the U.S., Canada, and Latin America. If you'd like to attend, listeners can get a 50% discount by going to airlinesconfidential.com, clicking on the aviation banner ad, and using the promo code AC50. It's going to be a great event, and we're looking forward to being part of it.
Since we don't have a guest this week, Scott, let's take the time to discuss several questions from listeners. Nina from Chicago says, "Hi, Ben and Scott. I thoroughly enjoyed the segment with John Heimlich, a former colleague of Ben's and mine from our U.S. Air days. His comment about new aircraft prices being on average 20% higher and leases 30%, the general consensus John and I heard at ISTAT in Austin a couple of weeks ago, correlate with my concerns that original equipment manufacturers and lessors now have complete control of all incremental aircraft capacity through 2030 with unprecedented pricing and placement power over a scarce supply. How will they allocate this scarce supply through 2030? Only give it to the highest bidders? This will drive less healthy airlines around the world out of business in the coming years. Our razor-thin margin business cannot cover these price increases with limited ability to increase fares, as Scott expanded upon in a recent edition of your podcast. That, combined with a large number of grounded aircraft worldwide due to engine issues, continued slow supply chain recovery, higher labor costs, ATC staffing shortages, and still limited, although improving, pilot supply does not bode well in the coming 3 to 5 years for many airlines. The industry landscape will look very different 5 years from now. Food for thought. Well, Nina, thank you for this. I agree there is a lot of pricing power among the airline manufacturers. I was surprised, for example, when visiting the Airbus facility in Toulouse, that no work was being done after 5 p.m. Yet Airbus has a backlog of thousands of airplanes. Keeping constraints on availability is a key strategy to keeping and raising prices over time. Has anyone bought a Harley Davidson? I saw a report recently where someone in Europe said that the only solution to airline profitability over the next 10 years will be consolidation. This is also consistent with Nina's view. By the way, listeners who may not know Nina should know that she is one of the smartest and best leaders in the industry. I learned a lot from her when we worked together at US Airways.
Yeah, I think this is fascinating, and I'm really glad she highlighted this point. And the point that John was making, yeah, we know about higher labor costs. We know how important fuel is to airlines, but it is a low margin business. And this sector of it is really changing, is really going to get more expensive. And that itself is really going to raise pressure on airlines. So I think this is a big issue. It's going to get a lot bigger, and not one that people readily see, because when they think of airline costs, it's all focused on labor and fuel. Okay, Ben, Chris from Charlotte has comments and questions on American Airlines and what he calls the changing focus. Hi guys, after last week's news of AA slipping to the third largest airline from first, I'd like to get your thoughts on what appears to be a shift in focus towards more domestic flying in the company's future, as highlighted by a recent communication sent out to the pilots union below. Thanks and keep up the great pod. The pilots union communication said, 1995 just called, America West wants its business model back. It looks at American's presentation at its investor day, March 4th. Quote, unfortunately, the news isn't good from our pilots' perspective. Chief Executive Officer Robert Isom sees future profitability as dependent on growth opportunities in underserved domestic markets, with the crux of his business plan revolving around these marginal locations. In other words, the airline management team responsible for producing profit margins that badly lag those of Delta and United believes that opportunity beckons by taking on Southwest Airlines and the ultra-low-cost carriers. In his Investor Day remarks, Chief Commercial Officer Vasu Raja emphasized that, quote, short haul is the foundation of value for our customers and investors, end quote from Vasu. The importance of the Sun Belt, flying larger airplanes to smaller cities, and improving the domestic network were his primary focus. He mentioned, quote, opportunities in El Paso, quote, more than a dozen times. At least there's good news if you happen to live in El Paso. But where are the legitimate opportunities for future growth that produce profits? The pilot communication also noted, as we have seen from the recent foray into Austin, these well-intentioned plans are typically money losers. The profits are almost never in line with our competition at Delta and United, which see the benefit of catering to the premium business and international customers that American appears to be abandoning. So, Chris, thank you for all that. It is very interesting. We've talked about some of this before, Ben, and you and I have talked offline about American's Investor Day presentation and the focus on relying on population growth in the Sun Belt and smaller markets. What do you think of where America stands right now and what its strategy is?
My eyes glazed over looking at that American investor deck. It had so many ideas that they tried to pass off as real facts. I think what it really was a way to defend where they are, not where they want to be. Are they really going to let Delta and United carry all the long-haul traffic? And what will they do when Frontier adds 25 flights to El Paso and picks off all of their domestic connections? American needs a much clearer and more convincing business strategy than what they're now trying to sell. American stakeholders should be concerned, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Losing ground in New York and Los Angeles is just huge. Reducing service in Austin is sort of waving the white flag there. I think Americans, you know, having a tough time competing, and there are lots of reasons for that. Service and dependability. Now, dependability is improved, but they have a long way to go to catch up to United and Delta. And I don't think the strategy of focusing on small markets where maybe you can benefit from Spirit's woes is what's going to save the day for a global carrier like American. Okay, Boaz from New York says he was, quote, listening to your podcast where it came up at the end about the large overhead bins. I was actually listening to it from a recently refurbished United A320 with the new large bins. United is trying to educate passengers. Its system knows if you are on one of the oversized bin aircraft. I received a text to commence boarding, and in the text, there was a note informing me that the aircraft had large overhead bins and had animation in it showing the proper ways to stow bins on their sides. It was pretty good, and I'm impressed with the specificity of aircraft straight to a personalized text. I work in the industry, am a very frequent flyer, and enjoy hearing your general takes on things. It's part of my job to do some of the analysis that you both often talk about when talking about what's going on with costs and revenue, lease terms, old engines versus new engine technology, industry trends, etc. Well, thanks, Boaz, and thanks for the mention of United's bin alert system. It's a great use of technology. I'm not sure people really pay attention beyond, okay, time to start boarding. United always has a crush for its different boarding groups, so I hope people pay attention to the text message. We mentioned United's innovation on wheelchair transport. Obviously, United is developing some very practical aids through its app for customers and for the airline.
Scott Chester from Philadelphia says he's been a dedicated listener of the podcast for quite some time, eagerly anticipating a new episode every week. Thanks, Chester. He says, I wanted to share a recent flight experience and pose a question for both of you. On a recent trip from a rural airport to Philadelphia, my flight encountered a nearly five-hour delay. This delay was primarily due to high winds and bad weather conditions in the Philadelphia area, causing a delay in the inbound flight and subsequently affecting my return trip. Since the return was the last flight of the day from the airport, canceling the flight would mean waiting until the morning for the next available flight. As the delay extended, my concern shifted from the plane's arrival to whether the pilots would have sufficient remaining hours for the return trip to Philadelphia. While I grasped the basic concept of pilot hours, the limitations on flying hours within a given period, accounting for both taxiing and flying time, I'm curious about the proactive measures airlines might take to prevent pilots from timing out. In this specific scenario, considering Philadelphia is an American hub, and I should note I was flying American, would the airline explore options such as a proactive crew change to alleviate concerns about timing out, or maybe have crew that is on standby fly as passengers to take over in the event the taxiing flight take longer than anticipated? I understand those two solutions are extremely human resource driven. Are there other tactics an airline might deploy to avoid unnecessary delays when other delays outside of their control are already happening? I'm eager to hear your thoughts. Chester, you are right on both counts. At a hub, American can move crews around to avoid timing out sending the crew that was scheduled for your flight out on one they can legally operate, and maybe using that crew on a different flight and sliding everyone so that you get a legal crew. In addition, all airlines have a reserves pilots who can be called in when someone is sick or delayed or in danger of timing out. There are lots of tricks in the airline scheduling bag.
Indeed, crew scheduling can be more art than science, and some airlines are better at it than others. One of my favorite examples is sometimes Delta will fly a transatlantic flight to a Canadian stop or an island stop off the coast of the U.S. if the crew didn't have enough duty time to actually get all the way to its destination in the U.S. Instead of canceling, a fresh crew meets the flight and brings it to New York or Atlanta or wherever it was going. In Delta's push to improve reliability, the airline sometimes goes to great lengths to avoid cancellation. Well, we have avoided cancellation, and that's all for another episode of Airlines Confidential. Happy eclipse, everyone.
Have a great week. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is produced by Mass Media. Info at massmedia.net.